Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of the program, Dare to be Different. Just wonderful to have all of you tuning in, whether it's via the audio streaming medium of 15 Fortnite Satellite Islam, and those of you listening to us on DSTV Book 826. And we've had some topsy-turvy weather in the last couple of days, and I'm delighted to say this morning we've got a wonderful, wonderful guest who's no stranger to Radio Islam, and she's always given us such insight, information, and lots to share. And that's Michelle Kudzer from Brant Miller's Nursery. And I know many of you are still curled up in bed, others still having breakfast, and not too sure how many of us are adventurous to going out and being out in the garden. But I must say, as I walked in, brilliant sunshine, blue skies, and we are truly, truly blessed. We've had a cold day, and last week we were saying, well, we're right into smack bang into the middle of spring, and others said, well, don't be celebratory yet. We still have a cold snap coming in, and others reminded us that, you know, we've had our cold going into September as well. Well, thanks for all that reminder, but I must say to you that it's a wake-up call, and those of us who are in the process of packing away all our woolies and winter clothes, remember that it's not yet still time. Again, from people who are in the know-how saying, well, fine, we've had opinions saying that 9th of September, that's the time you pack things away. Others say, wait until the 15th of September. That's what my late father said. And other people are having different saying, well, wait until the end. So we have different opinions. And remember that weather is not in our control, but wherever it is, we make the best of it, and we are truly blessed for the brilliant sunshine. Hi, good morning, Michelle, and how are you?
Good morning, Ismail. I'm very well, thank you.
And like I said, we're not in charge of the weather, but like we had some people packing woolies away, and some others say it's not time to pack woolies away. Have you done that? Not as yet.
I really don't know what to say about the weather. My grandfather always said the 10th of October was the cutoff, so I really don't know what to say, because we all thought, as you said, that it was summer, but now it's back to winter again.
But I must say to that, the 2 days were really, you know, I know people are saying, well, what's happened to the weather? You know, it seems like, right smack bang into the middle of winter, and that was around about Thursday, Friday, Saturday. But I must say to this morning as I walked in and I looked around, it's brilliant sunshine, and it's warmer than it was for the last couple of days.
Oh, no, it certainly is a much warmer day. I think the big thing is the wind, you know, blowing from the Cape where they've had the snow, and on the Drakensberg where they had the snow. I think it's the wind that's actually made it so cold.
Now, you know, we have a lot of challenges around that whilst we are talking about the wind, and lots of people are anxious, waiting with lots of anticipation. Can we get out in our gardens? Busy shearing and pruning, and we had lots of that happening. And someone said to me, you know, I have lots of blossoms and, blooms, and would that be destroyed? I said, well, it just depends how severe it was, and it depends on what type of frost we've had. If it's a mild frost, I think it will recover, but if it's a black frost, I think, then we have some challenges.
That's quite correct, yes.
So, you know, Michelle, what advice do we give to people still? You know, do we take and say, look, take off all the protective covering? No, yes. We say, well, fine, just leave it on. We wait until maybe the mid, September. I'm not, what type of advice would we give?
I certainly wouldn't be removing the frost cover before the end of September.
Okay, so the end of September is perhaps what we would say. Now, you know, going on and looking at the weather patterns, and people have done, some have gone to scarifying and others haven't gone. It's too late to scarify our lawns.
No one can still scarify now. And for those listeners who don't know what that is, that involves a process called spring treatment of your lawns, where you cut your lawn short. In other words, you set your mower to the lowest setting, and then you mow your lawn, and then after that you take a rake, and you actually try and rake out all the dead, what they call the dead thatch, the dead grass. And then depending on whether you've got a compacted area, possibly a pathway to the, for example, the washing line where you're continuously walking all the time, it may have become compacted. Then those areas you can either use a spike roller or a fork and sort of wiggle it back and forth to make a few holes. And then you can sweep coarse river sand into those holes to improve the drainage.
So it's not too late for those that have large patches of lawn and wanting to, make sure that they have a better quality of lawn for the next season. Now, when we talk about, other chores in the garden, one of the things that's very big, on everyone's calendar is roses, to those of them that have roses now. Some people have said it's far too late because you're supposed to have pruned roses end of July. We're now coming almost end of August, and there are some buds. Do we still give them a good pruning, a hard pruning, or should we just leave that?
If they've already got buds, I would give them a very light pruning. And if they haven't started shooting yet, then you can still prune them back quite severely. And when I say quite severely, normally down to about 30 centimeters.
Yes, you know, and that's a new trend. I was reading about that, you know, that don't be scared. When you're out there with your shears, you know, what you wouldn't be too much, you wouldn't be doing, I beg your pardon, too much damage. But go out there and give it a hard pruning. You know, sometimes you say, you know, aren't we going to destroy the plant? Are we going to, you know, kill it? But I know that I've been looking at some of the trends coming through. You say, give it a very, very hard and severe pruning. Like you said, down to 30 centimeters. And we're talking about those. And those are standards or are those the bush roses?
Those are the bush roses. And yes, they must get a severe pruning because the more you prune them, they just seem to really shoot and you get a much better crop of roses if you've pruned them severely. The standard roses, those are the ones on the stem with the head at the top, those you would reduce by about approximately a third.
You know, I still have the constant question coming about fuchsias and begonias that haven't gone to sleep yet. You know, they haven't died, they haven't gone to sleep, they're still in bloom. And someone's saying, well, fine, prune, whatever pruning, do we prune, do we leave them? Are they going to grow scraggly? What do we think? What's been your advice? Because it's coming up all the time because of the mild winter that we had, so it hasn't really killed any of those plants.
This is the problem. Because we've had a mild winter, lots of things that should have got damaged haven't. So what one can do is do more a little bit of shaping rather than actual pruning back. You know, the things like, for example, you mentioned the fuchsias, is just prune them back slightly into shape, but not do a severe pruning on them.
Okay, and what about begonias?
Begonias, you could also just the scraggly bits or the damaged bits that may have got damaged with the cold, just prune them back and also just some shaping. I certainly wouldn't give them a hard pruning. Just be glad that they survived the winter.
Yeah, you know, that's the question. People are saying, you know, many of our plants seem to have sort of died, you know, done well, and I've even had reports of people saying some of their herbs haven't died down. Do they pull those herbs out, or they? What do they do with them?
If the herbs haven't flowered, you can continue harvesting them. You must just stop them from flowering, because once herbs start flowering, then they go to seed, and then it's actually the end of their lifespan, as it were. So things particularly like basil, if you've got basil that's had flowers on, you need to remove those flowers to stop them from going to seed. But you can also then just trim them back, and they'll shoot again.
So, you know, while we're looking at all of these sort of things that has to be done, what other chores are there to be done, you know, in the garden?
Well, I see a lot of the trees have sort of retained their leaves. They haven't all dropped their leaves at once. So there's some of the trees that still have leaves. So please don't rake those away. Use them in the beds as mulch or add them to the compost heap. That's definitely something to do. And then once you've sterilized your lawn, you need to put a lawn dressing on your lawn, and you'll see within a week or two, you'll see the new shoots going through the lawn dressing, and you'll have a beautiful lawn this summer. And as far as the beds go, please make sure that you don't dig them over continuously, because then you damage the roots. Rather take your leaves and your lawn clippings and spread them on the beds as a mulch.
Yes, and that trend is coming through very strongly, you know, the no tilling, no fork, you know, no turning. And I think we don't understand, but I think the microbes under there are disturbed, so that's the trend again. But of yesteryear, you know, it was pristine gardens, sweep everything and make sure when people come in they don't see any, you know, sort of sight. The lawn is, I beg your pardon, the soil has been compacted, but that trend has definitely changed.
No, for sure, and for the better. And then, of course, at this time of the year, one can also start preparing the beds for the winter veggies.
For the summer veggies?
I beg your pardon, yes. I'm thinking of winter because it was cold. For the summer veggies, Ismail, you're quite correct. Yes, things like your tomatoes and your peppers and your brinjals, even the pumpkins and the squashes. As I say, one can start preparing beds for those summer crops. And you need to mix in enough corn manure. And the best fertilizer for the veggies is something like a 2-3-4, particularly for your root crops, things like your onions and your beetroots, and if you're going to be sowing carrots as well, so you work that in as well. And then for tomatoes, they love bone meal because the calcium in the bone meal helps them strengthen their skin.
Okay, now I've also had a query with regards to bougainvillea. They're suddenly into flush, you know, and you find the bracts all up, and do just leave them and they'll let nature take its course?
Yes, I would leave them. And one thing about the bougainvilleas that I'd like to mention is that they like a hot, sunny spot, and they prefer to be slightly on the drier side. So one must make sure that you don't overwater them, because we all have to be mindful about the water we use in any case. But the point is that if you overwater them, they actually don't flower well at all.
Thank you for that, Tuan. And, you know, a query about, and I saw an interesting article yesterday by Kay Montgomery in which she spoke about, and we're going to chat a little bit about kitchen gardens, where she gave us lots of things about lemons and lemony flavors and lemony herbs. So we'll look at some of that. Now, one thing that she mentions there is to give bio-ocean. What is bio-ocean?
Bio-ocean is a fertilizer which is in a pellet form. It's an organic fertilizer, and it's specifically suited to indigenous plants as well as fruit and veggies as well as herbs.
Okay, so what do you do? You just throw it in, you dig it in, what do you do?
You sprinkle it around your crops.
Okay, and then, you know, there's also been this discussion, that, and I know we've had it previously as well, is that, you know, the drip line and not to sort of work or, you know, work around or not to interfere with the drip line. Tell us something about that.
And basically, for the listeners that don't know, the drip line is as far as what the plant or the tree's branches go, that is where the feeding roots are. So in other words, whether you're feeding a rose bush or whether you're feeding your herbs or a fruit tree or a real tree or a shrub, you can't be feeding around the stem because there's no roots right around the stem. You need to go at the end where the branches are. That's where the feeding roots are, and that's where the drip line is. So that is where you need to apply your fertilizer, not against the stem.
Now, just let's go through some of you know, the things that had to be done. We had to scarify, we had to prune. Now, just about prune, and we're talking now specifically stone fruits, and that we talk about peaches and now apricots and, you know, things like that. Which, you know, we have some of them that are early, that come in early and a bit later, and figs. Tell us something about those. Do we still have time to prune them? Should we have leave them? Because by now, I would assume in many, I haven't seen them, you know, now we don't have any in our garden, but in many others, you would have seen the buds and so forth. And then, of course, we talk about the fruit fly. Is it time now to take the necessary precautions against that?
Okay, first of all, the pruning. Your apricots, you generally don't prune, and apricots make a lovely shade tree, whereas your peaches, your nectarines, your apples and your pears, those you would be pruning. But the problem is because of the warm weather we've had that a lot of them have already started making blossoms. So basically, it's your choice. If you're going to be pruning them back, obviously, you're pruning half your fruit off because the blossoms eventually turn into fruit. So that's your choice whether you want to prune them now because they've already started making blossoms, or do you rather want to wait for next year and prune them more severely next year and make sure you do it slightly earlier, possibly middle of July, because we're finding that the last couple of years, the end of July seems to be a lot warmer than what it's been previously. And then to answer the question about the fruit fly, those that want to go the organic route, you can plant one of the herbs called tansy around your fruit trees, and that definitely helps with fruit fly. Alternatively, if you don't have a choice and you have to go the chemical route, what you do is you wait until 3/4 of the blossoms have fallen off, and that's when you start applying the poison for the fruit fly, and you continue every 2 weeks. And then the very important thing that listeners need to remember is that there's always a withholding period, a waiting period, from when you've last applied the poison before you can actually harvest and use the fruit.
Yes, and so, so when you're doing things systemic, I think the waiting period is about 21 days?
That's right, yes. It's normally between 14 and 21 days, depending on the actual product. So it's very important that they read the actual pamphlet that comes with the product.
Tell us something about tansy. Now, the tansy plant herb, is that available? Is it in a bush form? Does it come in a ground cover? What is the tansy, and how would it protect the plant?
It's actually a perennial herb. It's become quite a big bush of almost a meter high and a meter in width, and it makes the most beautiful yellow flowers, like little daisy flowers, and it's quite fast growing. It dies down in winter, and then it comes up in spring again, and you can plant them around your fruit trees, and then it definitely repels the fruit fly. And it also helps with beetles, because the beetles are always attracted to the yellow, so they're automatically then attracted to the yellow. So if you plant them near your veggies, like your cabbage family and so on, they would certainly help keep the beetles away from your crops.
So when you plant, you know, when we're talking about a tansy, one tansy will do enough for several fruit plants, or should every fruit plant have a tansy?
No, because they become quite a big bush and they have quite a pungent smell, I would say one for three or four fruit trees should be more than sufficient. And they also use them when you make your own natural insect spray. You can actually use the leaves of the tang and sort of boil it and cook it into a tea, as it were. And then you can spray your plants with that as well.
So tansy has got multiple uses, and, you know, you could make a concoction and then, you know, spray it on, or you could just use it as a plant in your garden as well.
Exactly, yes.
And now, you know, the other question coming through about figs and mulberries. Tell us something about this. Do you have to do anything about figs and mulberries, or are they fine? What happens?
Figs, you just need to prune back slightly, because a fig isn't a proper tree. It's more of a big shrub. So it's really a question of shaping them. And the mulberries are normally very big trees. So that is a problem, because you need to keep them small to be able to reach the fruit.
No. Sorry about that. And how do you feed them? You know, both the figs and the mulberry, are there specific feeds, or could you use an organic feed, or would one of the 2-3-5 or 2-3-7s do? What would you suggest?
You need to take something that's got a high potassium content, and potassium, for those listeners that don't know, is the last number. So, for example, a 2-3-4, the 4 would be potassium, and then that encourages fruit and flowering. So it would be either a 2-3-4 or a 3-1-5 stock is, has a very nice organic 3-1-5. And then you could also use, if you want to go the complete organic route, then you would use the BioOcean. They would be suitable, and you could use that then for your fruit trees as well as your flowering things. And as I mentioned before, it's safe on indigenous plants as well.
Sorry, Michelle, we seem to be losing a little bit in the conversation. If you can just turn the direction of your phone, perhaps we get a clarity of the sound. Sorry.
Okay, I've tried that now. Is that better?
That's fine. You know, avocados are in full season, and I must say to you, somebody had an avocado yesterday that had a sweetish taste, and that has never been before. What do you think has gone wrong? Or are they hybridizing avocados? Do you think that's happening? What is it? Because avocado, you know, as we understand, avocado doesn't have a sort of sweet taste. Is that right?
No, it's not supposed to. I've never had a sweet ever. I think it might be different varieties, because they are continuously hybridizing and bringing new varieties. So it might be new varieties that are coming onto the market that have actually got a different flavor.
Well, you know, it looks as big as a melon.
Wow, now I've never seen that.
No, that's what I'm saying. I must assure. Okay, and just a question about the avocados. Do they make good fruit trees if you take them from, you know, seed and then plant the seed and wait for it to grow? And like I know, I was reading an article, when you plant, don't plant for yourself, plant for future generations, because in many instances you may not see the fruits yourself. Is that true?
That is true. Look, if ever becomes a huge tree, what the listeners need to know, that any of the fruit trees they're planting from pips, you're obviously not going to get the same quality like you get in the shops, because those that they sell in the shops are grafted trees. So if you're wanting to plant a fruit tree, I would certainly recommend buying it from a garden center and make sure it's a grafted tree, because the quality will be so much better than one that's being grown from seed.
And then, you know, how long does it take for an avocado sort of to give off fruit?
Although it takes quite a few years, I would reckon around 7 years plus.
Okay. And it has got a destructive root system?
It is a fairly big tree, but the root system isn't that bad. I would say you'd be safe probably about 7 meters from a building.
7 meters from a building, or 7 meters from a wall, or, you know, the boundary wall or something, because you don't want to, you know, the neighbors complain that their wall has been, you know, uprooted or so.
That's correct, yes.
Okay, and then just finally, before we go for just some, you know, ad breaks, we continue. What other thing has to be done in the garden? So we've looked at the scarifying, we looked at the pruning, we looked at, and now we're looking, and you spoke about, you know, planning our beds. Just quick, you know, what should be going, whilst you spoke about, you know, the kraal manure and 2-3-4, any other thing, and just tell us a little about rotation of crop before we go for the break.
Yes, crop rotation is very important, it's not because you can get some soil-borne diseases that spread from the one crop to the next. So it's very important, even with seedlings, as in flowers, you also can practice crop rotation, because certain of the seedlings, like for example the petunias, they get a disease, and if you continue planting the same either flowers in the same soil or the same crop in the same position, you do get diseases that build up. So it's a very good practice, not only for your crops, but for your seedlings as well. So for example, if you've had petunias last year, try and plant a different flower in that same soil, and the same applies to the veggie garden. Don't plant sort of spinach or tomatoes or brinjals in the same sort of try and rotate it. And if you've had pots that you've had your crops in, you can then rather take that soil out and replace it with fresh cotton soil so that you know that you don't have foodborne diseases that you plant too.
Sorry, man, we're losing you again. I'm sorry about that. We're losing you, Michelle.
Let me turn again. Is that better?
That's fine. Okay. Now, you know, so what about if a person's wanted to go and, you know, use the same spot, but then, you know, just turn over the soil and put in new soil? Would that be good enough, or would they have to still do, you know, practice crop rotation?
Crop rotation is the best, but if you can't for space constraints, then you just need to make sure that you mix in enough compost to improve the soil and add your fertilizer. And what you can do is you can even, particularly with your veggies, you can add some marigolds for the summer because they also help to keep the insects away.
Thank you very much for all of that. We're just going to go for a short ad break. When we come back, we'll continue to stay. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Welcome to another edition of a program, Dare to Be Different. Just wonderful for all of you tuning in. And to those who have just tuned in, we have a wonderful guest, and that's Michelle Kudzer. Remember, you could dial us on 854-1548, join our conversation, and we're talking about what's to be done at the garden at this particular time of the year. We're now going to be looking at kitchen gardening, and that's the latest trend, and we know that lots of happening around food security and, people are concerned about what they're consuming and also the astronomical price of food. And the trend is getting stronger and stronger, and not only in South Africa, but internationally. And Michelle is going to help us with kitchen gardening. Michelle, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you very much. When you talk about kitchen gardening, what are we talking about? In the old-fashioned garden where you have one herb and one veg, is that it?
No, not quite. No, as you said, people are planting more and more fruit and veggies and herbs. And I think the main thing is that listeners need to realize that a lot of it can be done in containers. So those that have limited space can definitely still have some veggies in pots. For example, tomatoes and chilies and green peppers do very well in pots. So if you've got a big pot, approximately a 30, 35 centimeter pot, you can certainly plant one plant in there, and you'll be able to harvest so many peppers or chilies or brinjals from that.
No, carry on. I'm sorry, man. You're still breaking up, Michelle. I'm sorry.
Oh, dear. I'm so sorry about this.
That's better. That's better. That's far better.
Okay.
Right.
Okay. I keep on turning my chair around and around. As I say, containers. Even lettuce you can do in containers. They don't have to be very deep. More sort of a typical flower box depth would be fine for things like lettuce and spinach and some of your herbs like the chives. In actual fact, most of the herbs could be grown in a fairly shallow flower box. It's just things like rosemary that become a big shrub and lemon verbena that becomes a huge shrub of about 2 meters that you certainly wouldn't be able to do in a little flower box, that you'd have to put either in a bigger container or directly in the garden. But when we talk about kitchen gardening, the trend is definitely to plant a selection of veggies as well as herbs and even include some citrus. And the new term that they're using for that is called a potager, where you have sort of a whole mixture of citrus as well as fruit and veggies and then herbs together.
And, when I was looking at the trends again, you know, it seems to be very trendy these days to put them into little boxes, into boxes, whether it's wooden boxes or even to take, you know, plastic, the hard plastic milk containers, and we get them, or the cold drink boxes. You take them and then you make them and you can paint them into trendy colors and so forth and then plant in that. Would that make, and then it makes such a stunning display because it's just outside your kitchen.
Exactly, yes. And many people are recycling all sorts of containers that they're turning into containers for their veggies. And they're actually making a focal point of it, really making it quite attractive looking. And I think what's also important is when you select your herbs, is try and select those that you're going to use. There's not much point in planting something that you're not going to use. So I think it also depends on what type of cuisine you enjoy making. For example, if you make a lot of Mediterranean type dishes, then you would be needing to plant things like rosemary and sage and thyme and bay. And whereas if you're making more Asian type dishes, then you're going to be needing to plant coriander and parsley and lemongrass and that type of thing. And also, you mentioned earlier on the lemon flavors. You know, there's so many herbs that have got lemon flavor. So if that's what tickles your fancy, then rather plant that type.
you know, let's just go back to some of the things that we can do now that we're wanting to start off a kitchen garden. And kitchen gardening would mean any of those things that we'd use in our food for the day-to-day, you know, on a daily basis. That's right.
That's correct, yes. And including even things like small little tomatoes that you could use, cocktail tomatoes that you could use in your salad, because one plant produces so many, so one really doesn't need many plants.
And when you look at, you know, the kitchen gardening, what sort of directives do we give to our listeners? What could they plant, what can't they? And we're now getting into a season where things would be in abundance. At the moment, garden centers don't have, they're not yet spoiled for choices. Is that right?
That is right. It is a little bit early, but I've seen that some of the garden centers have already got tomatoes in. And then very soon, probably by the end of the month, depending on the weather, if it warms up, it might be sooner. But I reckon by the end of the month, you should be seeing things like peppers and chilies and brinjals as well. And your seeds could go in now already, your seeds of your pumpkins and your squashes and your baby marrows. And in the slightly warmer areas, you could put your watermelons and your melons in already.
You know, when we're talking about seeds and you can put them in, I've had a question about coriander, and they don't seem to have any success with the seeds. Are there specific ways of planting coriander, or does coriander have, or the coriander that you get from the, you know, stores, from the grocery stores and so forth, that is not suitable, is that right?
And that you can't plant the seeds from the grocery stores. It needs to be in a proper seed packet from a seed merchant. And the big thing with seed that we need to remember is that it must never dry out. Because if seed has dried out once, it's gone. And that's very important. And people need to realize they can't go and sow their seed in full sun and expect it to grow. They're not going to keep it moist. So I would recommend possibly doing it first in seed trays and put it in a slightly shadier spot. And once they've germinated and they're about 10 centimeters tall, you can then plant them out, because then you're planting out a stronger seedling. But the important thing is that they mustn't die out.
You know, when we... Sorry, go ahead. We're again losing you, but carry on.
And also what one needs to remember for most of the herbs and the veggies is that you need a sunny position, because I find this is often the problem, that people want a kitchen garden, but they don't have a lot of sun. So it needs at least half a day's sun.
A half a day's sun, and would it be north-facing, south-facing, in any particular direction, or is that not important?
It is important, if especially if you want to make more of an old traditional veggie garden and you want long beds, then it's important that the beds face north-south. In other words, they'll get the full morning sun from the east and then they'll get afternoon sun. Whereas if you swing them from north to south and you have some taller plants, let's say you opt to plant beans, climbing beans or something like sweet corn, those would then shade the other plants. So it's better to do your beds north-south.
And when we, you know, when we're looking at all of these, there's been a big trend with heirloom seeds. Are those available now, and is it the right time to plant?
Yes, it is. They are available. I think there's a big move to the Raw range. It's branded under Raw range. They have a lot of the heirloom seeds, and yes, it's definitely time to do your seed now already.
Why is it the Raw range? Is this just the name? Is it just the branding?
It's the brand name. It's called Raw, R-A-W, Raw.
Yes, I saw that, and I wasn't too sure what that was. Now, when we're talking about, you know, and then again, tomatoes, we're talking about, and we normally think of tomatoes as red, but I've seen tomatoes now in different colors. Is that right?
Oh, yes. You get green ones, you get orange ones, yellow ones, sort of dark purple, almost black ones, and then there's even some available with markings on them. And they all have their own distinct flavor and size and shape as well.
And, you know, would they be easily available, or would they be just at selected spaces, or where would you get all these, you know, beautiful colors of tomatoes?
The seed isn't readily available, but often the garden centers have plants of the fancier varieties. Unfortunately, some of the varieties, some of the supermarkets have exclusive rights to those particular varieties, but you certainly can at the garden centers get some, for example, like a yellow pear tomato, a little cocktail tomato, and some with striping, and what they call the rainbow ones and the orange ones, and the black one is called Cherokee, and that is usually readily available. But as I say, in seed, not so easily.
And when you're talking about, you know, all the different ranges, and we talk about that, and there's been also a trend that does very well in containers, is the miniatures, you know, the smaller, you know, versions of the squash and the you know, all the other vegetables that men, you know, they've managed to get. Would that be easily available?
Yes, they are. It's a bit early for them. I would imagine that they'd be available from about mid to end September. Things, for example, there was a baby brinjal available last year and the year before, as well as a small cucumber called patio snacker. And as the name suggests, more suitable for patios than they can be done in containers because it's a much smaller plant.
Okay, so and then those would be a bit later. When we talk a bit later, how long, how much later do we talk around about?
I would
September,
say
October?
Mid to end September.
Mid to end September.
Yes.
Then, now, you know, just talking, I've got someone saying, what is, you know, what should we be doing now with our gardens? You've spoken about, you know, getting our beds ready and so forth. Is that the only thing, or is there anything that we could really do? I want to get something done in my garden.
Well, the thing is, a lot of gardeners haven't gone out in winter, so they possibly need to do a bit of pruning back, you know, sort of dead bits that have got damaged, they can prune that back, and so just do a general clean-up and possibly repot some of the indoor plants. And the plants in containers outside, I find often with time the soil sort of sinks down and you can then just top up your soil with potting soil. If you've got things like azaleas or camellias, they love a mulch of acid compost, so you just sprinkle that around them. Because they've got fairly shallow roots, you don't dig it in, you just sprinkle it around them, and they certainly will enjoy that. And then one needs to obviously start feeding the lawn as well with something to feed the roots. So either a 2-3-4 or a 2-3-2. And in actual fact, the whole garden can do just with a general food like a 2-3-4 just to get everything going again.
Just tell us something about you know, the lemon flavors. And lemongrass, is that an easy plant to grow or is it something difficult?
No, lemongrass is very easy. The only thing is that it is frost tender. And in the cooler areas, it definitely dies down completely. And apart from the lemongrass, there's lemon basil, there's things like lemon thyme, and then even lemon verbena. Lemon verbena, as I mentioned earlier, is a big shrub, a deciduous shrub, and the leaves have an absolute lemon flavor, and they often use it in teas.
That's a lemon verbena that becomes a big shrub, is that right? And it's got a sort of a white flower.
That's correct, yes, a fine little white flower, that's correct, yes.
And what about the melissa? You know, you know, when you normally go out and you find that melissa is a lot associated with the Mediterranean climate, and it attracts lots of bees. Tell us something about melissa.
Melissa is commonly called as a lemon balm, and they use that in salads as well. They also use it in drinks, and it's really a tough little plant. It looks very much like a mint, very closely related to the mint, and it's very easy to grow, and it's more sort of like a ground cover, if I can put it that way.
And, you know, are these all, you know, sort of indigenous to South Africa, or do they come from other places?
No. The only herb that I can think of off the top of my head, which is indigenous, is the Sutherlandia, the cancer bush, and then the wormwood, the African wormwood, what they call the wilde alf. That's all I can think of off the top of my head that's indigenous.
What about, you know, geraniums? Geraniums have made a big comeback, and we now find people are planting them for different uses. And there's also one that has a citronella flavor. Is that correct?
That's correct, yes. Geraniums are indigenous. Their real name is pelargoniums. We call them bush geraniums or center geraniums, depending on which variety. But they are definitely indigenous, more to the Cape area. And as you say, there's so many new scented ones that are available, sort of cinnamon scent, apple scented, nutmeg scented, rose scented, lemon scented, and citronella. So yes, geraniums definitely, there's many scented varieties that have a lot of uses, particularly for potpourri and for insect repellent.
Now the citronella and all of these, could they be sort of used to make a tea out of them? Would that be harmful or should they not be, you know, taken as a drink?
I've never noticed them taken as a drink, the leaves. What I have noticed is that they take the leaves of some of the scented ones and they actually use that in baking, in making cakes. And, of course, the flowers are edible, so they often use the flowers that they freeze them in ice cubes and then use them in drinks. But I've never seen the leaves used as a tea.
So I'm just thinking if they can use them in baking, I'm sure they could be eating them. I'm not too sure. I was wondering about that one.
Yes, I would imagine so, yes.
Again, and just another thing, with the trends still going on, the trends, and we're looking at what is happening, and we find that people are now, you know, planting for sharing, you know, that it's, you know, the trend that you plant and that you can share with people the harvest or the bounty that you have. And what people are now doing is, you know, if you have a large or you buy, you know, the seedlings and you have six, you don't need six, you could just use three and pass them on to your neighbor. Is that very trendy still?
Oh, yes, most definitely. And also you find that some people are buying the brinjal and the other one's buying the tomato and the other one's buying the chili, and they're sort of swapping out the crops, as it were. But this is the thing. You do often get, sort of from October, you do in the garden centers get bigger plants, a single plant in a bigger pot. So those that really have limited space could opt for that. But obviously that's more expensive than buying, let's say, a seedling. But often growing your own, you do find that you have an oversupply, which you can then either freeze or you can donate it to a charity.
So, you know, when we're looking at the trends, both South Africa and we're looking at internationally, this food security is a big, you know, it's come to the fore. And gardening trends around the food has now changed, where people have made them. It's not just the kitchen garden any longer, but it's part of the focal of the main garden.
No, most definitely. And a lot of people are starting to use veggies and herbs in amongst the flowers. For example, I've seen thyme or parsley used very successful as a border in the place of something like alyssum, where people would traditionally have planted white alyssum. They're now planting things like thyme and mints and, you know, even lemon balm one can use, and parsley, because they really make very nice borders. And spinach, you get the spinach, the rainbow chard, which becomes quite tall, probably about three, actually about 500 millimeters tall, and they have nice colored stems in oranges and yellows and pinks, and that can add some color to your flower garden, as it were, but then at the same time, it's something useful that you can pick.
And, you know, talking about the, you know, the spinach plant, you wait for it to grow as tall as that, and could you then harvest it, or would it be too bitter?
The problem with the bitterness is usually a lack of water, and you're quite right that the older it becomes, the more bitter it is, so one can certainly harvest it at a younger stage.
Question coming through with regards to parsley. You're speaking about parsley, but parsley is such a difficult plant to grow, is it true?
It is a bit of a temperamental plant, and the listeners are going to laugh now, but the advice we often give is if the husband has planted the parsley and it hasn't been a success, let the wife plant it. And quite honestly, what I'm telling you now, the listeners are really going to laugh at. I had a staff member that used to plant the parsley, and every time he planted it, it died. And then the one day I made him wear gloves, and when he planted them after the gloves, they survived. So parsley is definitely temperamental.
Well, Mohammed's looking at me and saying, well, what else? He thinks the whole of gardening is temperamental. That's what Mohammed thinks.
No, gardening is fun, and it's therapeutic, and it's relaxing.
Yeah, no, well, he thinks, well, if the parsley could react like that, I'm sure lots of other plants would. And, you know, really, I must say to you, lots of people are complaining, say, look, you know, our parsley never grows. We seem to go, and, you know, it doesn't seem to have the success with parsley. Questions coming still through about chilies. Is that the time, or do we wait for chilies?
Chilies, the minute they're available, you can plant them. I would imagine by the end of the month they should be available. And the big thing to remember is that, as I said earlier, they need full sun, or at least half a day sun, and they also do very well in sun.
Okay, and sorry, I mean, you're still breaking up. I do apologize. We seem to not have you very clear.
I was saying the chilies need full sun, at least half a day sun, and they also do very well in containers.
Okay, and then just a question coming through about containers. You mentioned earlier on, listeners, says that you mentioned that lots of plants can be, you know, lots of veggies could be planted in a container. Is that true?
Oh, yes, most definitely. As I said earlier, things like your parsley and your lettuce and your spinach can be more in like a flower box type of container, because they don't need the deep root space, whereas something like a tomato or a brinjal or chili that you're expecting it to bear a lot of fruit, they need slightly deeper soil to anchor the plant better.
And you also mentioned here something, just looking at that, about growing melons and watermelons from seed. Would you put them into seed trays now, or how would you plant them direct into the ground?
Normally things like pumpkins and melons you would put directly into the ground. And when you're planting them, put two or three seeds in the same hole, so that at least if the one doesn't make it, at least you've got others. And as I say, you plant them definitely directly into the ground. There are sometimes pumpkins and melons available in the garden centers these days. It never used to be. It's a fairly new thing, but you can also wait for seedlings. But those that are in the warm areas can certainly put them in now already.
Question coming through about grenadillas. I've got a grenadilla bush, seems to be taking over my whole space. What do I do?
Grenadillas, you can chop them back. They need to be preferably on the northern side, where they get a little bit of warmth so that they're away from the cold southern winds. And they can be fed with something like 315 to encourage fruiting. But if they've gone a bit rampant, you can certainly cut them back.
Okay, I'm just looking at some of the questions still coming through. I think there's one more coming through about stone fruits. Just what it says. It says stone fruits, so what else to be done to make sure that we get a bounty harvest?
You can feed them with 315, because 315, as I said earlier, encourages fruit and flowering, but remember it needs to be applied at the drip line, not around the stem.
And finally, the question coming through was, you know, my citrus has lots of lemons on, and it's going to be flying throughout the year. What else could I do? What are the other watch points?
Citrus is very important that they drain well. If you've got a soil slightly on the clayey side, you need to add coarse river sand to improve the drainage. They also do very well in containers, because the container obviously restricts the growth to a certain extent, and they drain well generally. So they can be planted in containers, but the big thing is that they must be kept on the drier side. And they enjoy Epsom salts once a month, and they'll also benefit from 315.
Now, you've got a lovely initiative going on at your space, and that is at Brand Miller's Nursery. Tell us something about this garden, this market that you have.
It's a brand new market. We had our first market last Sunday. It's called the Treehouse Community Market.
You just turn around again. We lost that one. Sorry.
I beg your pardon, Ismail. Is that better?
That's fine.
It's called the Treehouse Community Market, and we had our first market last Sunday, and it was a huge success. So the next one is on the 10th of September. There's food stalls. We even had samosas. We had roti rolls. There were craft stalls as well. There was live entertainment. And what's important about this market is that a percentage of the proceeds is going to various charities in the Vaal. And the lady that runs it, her name is Melissa, and she's part of the IAHV, and there's various projects that they support in the Vaal. So she's using the proceeds from the market for these specific projects that they are funding in the Vaal.
And when you look at, the crafts and so forth, these would be done by the women in the area and so forth?
Yes, and the public can actually book a stall, and then the fee that they pay for the stall, that money goes towards the community projects.
Again, so if people are wanting to get in touch with someone, how do they do that?
The lady's contact name is Melissa, and her number is 082-854-3203.
Just repeat that number, please.
082-854-3203, and it's Melissa.
It's Melissa, and she can book a stall there. And
that's right, yes.
And finally, before we let you off, will just tell us what's happening in your side of the world, whatever we have exciting for us.
Well, we've got lavenders on special at the moment, bush geraniums, which is a really lovely colour at the moment. There's cancer bushes on special, and 321 fertilizer for the lawn, as well as lawn dressing. And I'm going to take a chance on mentioning the price, if I may. It's like the lawn dressing is really on a huge special. It's 10 bags for $2.69.
Okay, thank you very much for that. You take care. I'm sure lots of people will be coming in. And with the warmer weather, I know lots of people are ready to go out into the gardens. But you take care. Thank you very much for sharing, and we'll speak to you again.
An absolute pleasure. And I'm really sorry about the signal. I don't know what was the problem.
Not a problem. You take care. Thanks, Malia.
Thank you, Ismail. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. And that was Michelle Kudze telling us what's to be done in the garden and trendy garden kitchens and so forth. And don't forget, this morning at 9:30, Radio Islam's AGM takes place at Masjid Salihin. It's out in 13. We'd love you to be there. Please do support us and come around there. It is my station, your station, our station. It belongs to all of us, and we need everyone's support. Mohammed's smiling. Yes, we need everyone's support. So please do come in, and the AGM taking place 9:30, and you can join us for a cup of tea and some eats as well. So that happens from 9:30 on this morning. That's all for me. Until we meet again, inshallah. Assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.